compact star physics. The last time we discussed the equation of state, we discussed the outer crust and the inner crust and the thickness of the crust, and discussed finally the properties of nuclear matter, saturation density, and the stiffness or softness of an equation of state. Any questions about last lecture? So today we're going to discuss neutron matter. In neutron stars, of course, we have actually to a very high degree pure neutron matter. And pure neutron matter has a stunning property which we're going to discuss. And the stunning property is that in principle we can describe it in terms of what is called a unitary gas. And we know rather precisely what a pure neutron matter equation of state is up to saturation density and slightly above saturation density. And this result was only known or achieved or solidified or confirmed in the last, say, 5 years or 10 years at most. So it is a development which happened just on the timescale of, you know, about neutron stars, rather recent. So we talk about pure neutron matter. So for pure neutron matter, we need a neutron-neutron interaction. Rather precisely, we know nuclei, and from nuclei we can deduce nuclear forces, but we also can use scattering experiments, proton-proton scattering or a proton-nuclear scattering, and from that we can infer then indirectly the neutron-neutron interactions. So if you look at a neutron, at neutron-rich nuclei, to describe the properties of neutron-rich nuclei, of course, we have to have also a good handle of the neutron-neutron interaction. And there we have what are the most extreme ones are C over A is 0.25. This is for 8 helium. So 8 helium is stable, particle stable, so it decays, of course, by weak interactions, but it's particle stable, so it doesn't emit a neutron or a proton. Then we have 0.27 for 11 lithium and 0.29 for beryllium-14. Beryllium-14. So these nuclei are so neutron-rich that they form a halo of neutrons around the core. Halo of neutrons. And it happens actually if you take away one particle, so if you take away one neutron, so it's basically you can consider it with a neutron here, a neutron here, and a nucleus here. So we have a neutron and a neutron. And a nucleus A. Yeah. And if one takes away one of these particles, so if I take away the nucleus, the neutron-neutron system is unbound. Yeah. So neutron-neutron system, the neutron-neutron system is known to be unbound. The proton-neutron system is a deuteron, there we know a bound state. Yeah? So proton-neutron system, deuteron, bound state. Yeah, for comparison. The interesting thing about these two nuclei, 11 lithium and 14 beryllium, is if I take away also one neutron, the whole thing is unstable again. So if I take 10 lithium, or 13 beryllium.
Helium 8?
Yes, helium 8.
Okay.
Yes, quite stunning. Yeah. Helium 8.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so if I take away one neutron, then the whole thing also collapses. So 8 helium has 2 protons and 6 neutrons. And 6 neutrons for recall is just a filled 1p3 half shell. Yeah, so it's a good combination of neutrons. Lithium has 3 protons, so this has 8 neutrons. Again, 8 is a magic number. And here we have beryllium has 4 protons, so these are 10 neutrons. Yeah. And these are the most neutron-rich nuclei we know of. Right? If you look at, for example, lead 208, the charge to mass ratio is 0.39. Yeah, so for these nuclei, we are talking about charge to mass ratios of 0.4 or so, not much less than that. Yeah, so this is the most extreme value here is for 8 helium. So these systems are what is called the boromine nuclei. Boromine systems or nuclei. Taking away one particle and the remaining nucleus falls apart. There's this symbol from a noble family of Italy, the Boromine family, who has these 3 intertwined rings. So the Boromine system are 3 intertwined rings. Intertwined rings. And if I take away one ring, then also the other 2 rings fall apart. But the 3 of the rings together hold each other. Yeah, so I have these 3 rings. And they're done in such a way that they only fall apart if you take away one ring. Yeah. Okay. Now this system actually has a corresponding symbol which goes back to the Vikings. Has anybody heard about the Valknut symbol? Valknut? No? Okay, Valknut symbol. So the Valknut symbol is a Norse symbol from the Vikings, which are, I think, 3, instead of rings, are somehow 3 triangles which are intertwined in a fashion which I think is something like this. So this symbol is rather old, actually. Okay. Yeah, so the study of these boromine systems, where we really have a halo of neutrons, so we really have a nucleus which is a few Fermi thick, while the neutrons are outside there having a range of, which is much larger than a few Fermi, say the order of 10 Fermi or so. Okay. Good. So let's describe now nuclear matter in terms of this asymmetry of neutrons and protons. So we introduce an asymmetry delta, which is the standard notation, which is defined to be the number of neutrons minus the number of protons versus the mass number A. And then we can define the binding energy. We can define a symmetry energy. And a symmetry energy as a function of the baryon density is defined to be 1/2 times the second derivative of the binding energy, which now depends on delta, versus this delta, the asymmetry, at the point that delta is equal to 0. Okay, so just pause a little bit and reflect what the definition means. So you recall the equation of state we had for nuclear matter. This was this has this parabola shape. This was for basically delta equals zero. We had n equals set, number of neutrons and protons are equal, so delta is zero for normal nuclear matter. Mm-hmm. For pure neutron matter, delta would be one. And now we expand around delta equals zero. Yeah, and we take the second derivative because it must be a minimum. Also in the other direction, in the direction of when I change neutron and proton number, it falls back into this minimum. So there must be also something like a parabola shape. And the curvature of this parabola, if you go away from n equals z, this is the symmetry energy.
I have two questions. Yeah. Is that an nb or an ub?
This is an n for number density.
Derivative, shouldn't that be
also? Oh, yes. Double delta is really funny. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we can expand the symmetry energy making a Taylor expansion in delta. Yeah, this expansion goes like this, that we say Sn from B is J, a coefficient J which does not depend on the number density, plus the term L, times the baryon density minus the saturation density over 3 times the saturation density. And this is just definition that one puts into 3 here. So just also has historic reasons. The J is called then the symmetry coefficient. And this one is what is called the slope parameter. And I mean, in the field, if you say the slope parameter, everybody immediately knows that one means this L. So, but of course, if you talk to a non-physicist about the slope parameter, it could be anything. But in this field, it's pretty clear. So this is somehow more or less unique classification, but with some ambiguities. So this symmetry coefficient is basically the energy difference between nuclear matter and pure neutron matter at saturation density, right? So at saturation density, this is zero. So this determines just the density dependence of the slope parameter. And the J is basically the symmetry energy when we go from delta equals zero to delta equals one. Yeah, then the total energy would be just the energy we have for nuclear matter plus the symmetry energy. And that turns out at the order of 32 MeV. So this means that basically pure neutron matter, this is determined from the study of nuclei. So we look at isospin symmetric nuclei, then we look at isospin asymmetric nuclei, like TIN 132 or Lead 208, and then one can determine this coefficient. One can also determine this coefficient actually by the study of different nuclei with different mass number, because they explore slightly different densities in the core or the surface of nuclei. So we can also determine the slope parameter. So J turns out to be pretty good, around 32 MeV. And L, the slope parameter, turns out to be at the range of 53.5 plus minus 15 MeV. And J is 32.3 plus minus 0.5 MeV. And this comes from a fit to nuclei. Fit to nuclear masses by using what is called a finite range droplet model. And that's the most recent version from 2012. So this is the finite range droplet model. Yeah, this is a triplet model. So you consider basically a triplet model which was initiated by the Bethe-Weizsäcker formula, that we have triplets of nuclei, and you do all kinds of corrections to it, surface terms, but also symmetry terms, and that there's a finite range in the interaction. There's this odd even staggering from the pairing energy. So this is taken all into account. And so far, this is actually one of the best fits one can do to nuclear masses we know of, the finite range droplet model. So this is pretty much the gold standard in the field. Good. So these values are known. This one is known pretty precisely. Yeah. And this one is known to a certain degree at a level of 30% here, we see here. Yeah. Not that well known. Yeah, and there has been a lot of debate and discussion about the value of this L parameter, but it turns out these are more recent numbers, so it turns out that this is actually a number which is now much better constrained than it was 10 years ago. There was not clear whether it is 50 or 100, like the Hubble constant, right? So when you go back to the Hubble constant, is it 50 or 100? So now we know it's 67 point or 73 point, something around 70. Good, so this has changed a lot in the field. So let's summarize. So for pure neutron matter, we know that delta is equal 1. And then E over A is then minus 16 MeV plus J. Yeah. And this is then about plus 16 MeV. At saturation density, yeah, at N0. Okay, so pure neutron matter is unbound according to these fits. Yeah, note that this is a huge extrapolation. Yeah, so we really go from a system where we have delta at the range of, what is this? So we have 0.25, but we have to go basically to a C over A ratio, which is 0. So this is still a huge extrapolation. Now the slope parameter has a particular interesting consequence for the equation of state. If you look at the pressure of pure neutron matter, and in the following, I will abbreviate that with P and M for pure neutron matter. Then the pressure is equal N0 squared dE over A dN B at N0. So for pure neutron matter, for symmetric nuclear matter, we know that the pressure is 0 at saturation density, right? By definition, because we are in equilibrium. If we now go to pure neutron matter and take the derivative with respect to the baryon density and take into account that we have now the symmetry energy, we find the only density dependence is adopting this form of the symmetry energy. Yeah? That this is the only term which is density dependent, so we get an L over 3 here. So this is just L over 3 times N0. So the slope parameter determines the pressure of pure neutron matter. So delta equal 1. And that's why it is so important for neutron stars, because the larger L we be, the larger will be the pressure, the larger will be then the possible maximum mass of neutron stars. So this parameter L is really crucial for the stability of neutron stars. Yeah, that's why it was so discussed extensively in the literature. We can also look at the ratio of the pressure to the energy density for pure neutron matter. So the pressure we just have seen is L over 3 times N0. Yeah. Then the energy density is the mass of the nucleon minus 16 MeV plus J times N0. Yeah. E over A is this one. So E energy density is this times the number density. This crosses out. Of course, this relation is only valid at saturation density, right? And this is L over 3 divided by 923 MeV plus J. And now you plug in your favorite numbers of L and J, but it doesn't change much. So this is at the order, actually, of 2%. 2%. Question?
Yes, for 3 again.
Pardon me?
Why the 3? What's that?
V?
Ja, genau, das V0.
Das ist ein N-Durchschnitt.
Das ist ein N0. Ach so, okay.
I crossed this out compared to this one. So N0 drops out. Yeah. So that ratio is just given by the nucleon mass, the L and the J parameter in the, for the above Taylor expansion of the symmetry energy. Comes out to be 2%. If you do detailed calculations, of course, you find that this is really the case. So pure neutron matter is still highly non-relativistic. It's not really relativistic. 2% is the pressure compared to the energy density. Okay, yeah. So we can also then estimate with that, we can estimate what is delta R over R at saturation density. Yeah, so then the delta R over R at saturation density for pure neutron matter is then about 3 to 6% for a compactness which we choose between 0.2 and 0.3. So still it means, if you look at ordinary neutron stars, the thickness of the mantle up to saturation density is just a few percent of the total radius of a neutron star. So still we have a lot to go even beyond saturation density to describe the properties of neutron stars. So we need to extrapolate. So let's go back to pure neutron matter. Pure neutron matter, turns out, can be described by scattering data. So pure neutron matter, we have to look at neutron scattering length. Little bit of scattering theory. So there is a phase shift. So there is a phase shift, and this is quantum mechanical scattering, standard quantum mechanical scattering theory. So you have a wave function, and you get a phase shift in the wave function when you do the scattering of two neutrons, and you find that this phase delta depends on k, where k is the relative momentum of the two particles. And the generic ansatz is that you can expand k times the cotangent of delta of k in a term which goes like 1 over a, the scattering length, plus a half times re, plus higher order terms, which is the range parameter. So as is the scattering length. And RE is the scattering, the effective range. Now let's look at the case for the two neutron system. One has determined those scattering length and a range parameter. And it turns out that ANN is equal minus 18.5 Fermi.
So this is huge compared to the size of the neutron, which is 1 Fermi, or the size of nuclei. The largest, heaviest nucleus is lead 208, has a radius of 5.5 Fermi. This has 18 Fermi. So this scattering length, so the range, or basically the scale of the nuclear-nuclear interaction is much, much larger than the nuclear scale, and even the nucleon scale. So this is huge. In nuclear standards. Just for completeness, the range, the effective range parameter for the nuclear-nucleon case turns out to be 2.7 Fermi. So this is okay. Yeah, but this is a higher order term. So for small relative momentum, this is the dominating factor. So if you consider now a system of a gas of neutrons, and they interact with each other. So these are all neutrons, interact with each other. Yeah. And basically the average distance is smaller than this 18.5 Fermi, then basically the scale, the relevant scale of the interaction is dictated by the distance of the two particles and not so much by the interaction, the details of the interaction. Yeah. So if two particles scatter, then basically the wave function is smeared out onto a range which is much larger than the average distance of the two particles colliding. So for a certain distance or density, so we can estimate now a critical density. Where basically what is called distance is about this scattering length a and n. So that would correspond to a Fermi momentum, and this is 1 over pi times the scattering length. And this is about 3 MeV. Yeah. Good. So above this density, basically, and you notice that this 3 MeV are much, much smaller than the typical Fermi momentum we have for nuclear matter, which is 250, 260 MeV. So this happens at low densities. These are low densities for neutron stars. Low density, so in fact that the critical density is even smaller than the trip line, the trip density, which is about 2 times 10 to minus 3 times the saturation density. So basically, what one can do to a first-order approximation, one can construct a theory where the only scale of relevance is the average distance between the neutrons. So basically, the neutron mass enters and the average distance, and that's all. And thereby, this is called a unitary gas. We can describe then pure neutron matter in terms of a unitary gas. Only distance counts. So this is a universal system. Yeah. So the setup we have now is that we have quantum mechanical particles, fermions, which are interacting. But the range of the interaction is much larger than the distance of the particles. And you can study this even in the lab, so with atomic gases. So you produce atomic gases which have half-integer spin and look at the properties at the equation of state, and you can actually determine the equation of state. You can also do it numerically. So you can run Monte Carlo simulations to study such a system, a gas of particles, where the interaction range is much, much larger than the average distance of the particles. And what you find is the following, that
E over A of a unitary gas is equal a correction factor xi times E over A for a Fermi gas. Fermi, which is about xi times kF squared over 10m³. Now this is basically that you can compute with a free gas of fermions, that's 3 over 10. And this prefactor here turns out to be xi, pardon me? Xi is 0. And this has been determined in atomic traps of 6 lithium. Xi is 0.370 with an error of 5. Statistical and systematical error is 8 in the last digit. Yeah, so basically this is 0.37 plus minus 0.01 is the error bar. So pretty well known. So basically we know the equation of state for pure neutron matter is given by this. And this is exactly the approximation we have used before, the xi factor, you recall, when we calculated the thickness of the crust. So it's really an excellent approximation. So let's look at the equation of state. How does this look like? And I need some space. Yeah, so we had the nuclear matter equation of state, which looks like this, then goes up. So here we have minus 16 MeV, the saturation point, and then it shoots up. How it shoots up, we don't know. And then now we have pure neutron. So this is symmetric nuclear matter, SNM, symmetric nuclear matter. And now we have the other one, plus 16 MeV, is what we had seen. So this goes basically like this. And E over A is basically given by xi times the Fermi energy of a Fermi gas. Which you see goes like, this is now a little bit erased, which goes like kF squared. Kf goes like the number density to the 1/3, so this goes like n to the 2/3, proportional to n to the 2/3. That's what I have written down actually initially for free Fermi gas down here. Yeah. So this is here is pure neutron matter. Now, okay, so this is the simple version. Of course, it's more difficult. Otherwise, people would have done it ages ago. The difficulty is, of course, you have these corrections in k squared. Yeah? And eventually, they will also kick in because that range is at 2.7 Fermi. However, it turns out if you do a detailed calculation, so you construct a model for the nuclear-nuclear interaction, you use what is called chiral symmetry, chiral effective field theory, to describe this nuclear-nuclear system. You describe the proton scattering data. You describe the binding energy of the deuteron. You even describe light, the masses of light nuclei like tritium and 3 helium and the alpha particle. And then with that potential, you do a many-body calculation and calculate the equation of state of pure neutron matter. And what you find is that basically you get an error band here, which lies pretty much close to the unitary limit, yeah, for a unitary gas. So this comes from what is called chiral effective field theory. Yeah, chiral, chi, and then EFT. EFT, chiral, EFT. T is missing, T. Yeah. So miraculously, all the corrections we have there somehow cancel out each other, all the higher order corrections, and we basically come back to the pure neutron matter equational state. Yeah, and this has been pioneered, among others, by my colleagues from Darmstadt. Kai Hebler and Achim Schwenk have been done extensive calculations and have been shown now that we pretty much know now the equational state. Actually, the error bar grows larger here, so say about 1.3 times saturation density, we know the equational state, and then the error bar gets too large, and so it should get larger here. So it is at a range of 10% or maybe then 20% at this point, and then what should stop. And then it continues, but how it continues, we don't know yet. Yeah? Because then higher order terms come into the game. Good. Questions about this? No? Good. Nice. Good. So we can construct a neutron star up to this density now. And okay. The chiral EFT makes also a prediction for the slope parameter and the J parameter. Now the interesting thing is that the chiral EFT comes from the other side. So they calculate basically pure neutron matter and then extrapolate to symmetric nuclear matter. Yeah. And in doing so, they find that J is 28.9 until 34.9 MeV. And L is equal 43 to 66 MeV. And that is from Krüger et al. From 2013, from the Darmstadt group. I got this value. Good, so you see also pretty recent. Okay. So we are at the end of this chapter. The next chapter would be mass radius relation, and I would say this is maybe a good time to pause for 5 minutes. I make room on the blackboard for the mass radius diagrams I'm drawing now, and then we continue.